Awesome. Who else is here?
Jody from Ohio.
Hi, Jody from Ohio. How are you?
Hi, Jody.
Hello. I'm fine, thank you. I may not stay on the call the whole time. I have kids coming home, and it's going to be pretty disruptive. So I'll join in when I can. Thanks.
That'd be great. No problem at all. Awesome. Well, let's do a quick check-in. I just started the recording. Liz, the recording's on. Today is August 25th, and this is the 3 p.m. Eastern Time PSS group. And today we are going to be talking about asking for help, which is always a fun one. But first, we're going to go around and see how everyone's doing. Who wants to check in and celebrate?
Well, I'll start since I may not be here long.
Okay.
So this is Jody, and we got our oldest off to college, his second go around. Yes, it was good. We got up there. Well, my husband wasn't able to go, but at any rate, we got up there, and my son said, I forgot my student ID. So it's 2.5 hours from home. And I didn't react very well. You know, there was a lot of me helping him make sure he had everything he needed and helping him get all the laundry done and packing. And, you know, that was an important detail. And but as time went on, I, you know, regrouped, I apologized, and, you know, mistakes happen. And we focused on how to fix it, which was great. And it entailed asking for help, which, you know, that's, he's really had a hard time with that. It's made it really hard for him in school because he hasn't sort of acknowledged his ADHD symptoms and where he needs help. If things get overwhelming, he just walks away and pretends like it doesn't exist. So this was good. That was a really good thing.
Good. Good. Awesome. Second trip to college, huh? Emotional second time? You said it was a second trip to college or his second year?
Yeah, it was. There was a time off period.
Oh, gotcha.
So he left school. He was spinning his wheels. He worked for AmeriCorps, which was great, and then decided he really did want to go back, and he is playing D3 soccer, which is great because that's got that built-in exercise structure, all the rest of it. So it's been a lot of celebrating this year, which is great.
Awesome. Yay.
Yeah.
We love it.
Very good.
Thanks. Fabulous. Thank you. Who wants to go next? Liz or Pam or Kathy?
Oh, okay. it's Liz. I had an interesting week. We went to the psychiatrist to have a med review, and this has been 5 years in the 5 months in the waiting. And you won't know this, Jeremy, but Kate has been depressed, so she's left school. And that's sort of been uncovered with just all her struggles. And she's been showing anxiety for a while. But
Well, you guys have had a lot going on.
Yeah, absolutely. So she's working with a private therapist because we can't get her into, over here we have a public system that you can, you go on the wait list for and you can be seen by a psychologist and a team of people. Well, we've been waiting so long for that we've gone privately, and the psychiatrist has taken a long time as well. So he was going to do the med review with ADHD, and the antidepressant that she's on, which the doctor, we found a new doctor that put her on one straight away. He said she needs something, and that's made a huge help. And we've got our daughter back, so that's been awesome. Still needs some tweaking, so but the psychiatrist just wants to work with ADHD and not touch the depression. But she was saying, "I need something. I need help." She was asking for help. It was fantastic. Great time to talk about this topic. She was asking for help, and he was basically saying, well, there's not really anything I'm going to do. There's not really anything more. I'm going to monitor your ADHD medication. I'm not going to change your depression medication. I can understand why, because you want to figure out which one's going to work first, what's doing what.
Sure.
But But we ended up getting back to the doctor, and the doctor said, right, I'm upping your antidepressant medication, and the doctor can work with the ADHD, the psychiatrist can work with the ADHD. So she feels someone's listening to her. So, yeah, that's,
wow.
We're at
but it's made a huge difference, it sounds like.
Yeah, yeah,
that's
it has.
Great.
It has, yeah.
I'm so glad you were able to get her on something. That's great. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Cool. Hammer Kathy.
Okay, so it's interesting. Liz and I, our lives seem to track each other, right? So, anyway, so my daughter only has 21 days of school classes left, and I absolutely am counting. 11 days she has a term break, and then she only goes back to school for 10 days. So I never thought, I didn't think she was going to get to this point. I thought she was going to not make it through the year. She's still struggling, but last week she saw an ADHD coach for the first time, which was great because I've been wanting her to do that all year. And she was seeing a psychologist who I don't think was particularly effective, but she really liked her. But that lady is now on maternity leave, and she's just started seeing somebody else who I think is very good, and who actually did the initial ADHD diagnosis last year. And she saw him twice this week, so that's really positive that she's starting to now get some help, because like Liz's daughter, he has called out that, you know, depression's a real issue for her, and now starting to work with her on that. So when I spoke to him after Lauren saw him on Monday, I asked about medication, and he said, well, the behaviour therapy is, you know, likely to be more effective in the short term, but we'll see how it goes. And she sees her psychiatrist again in 2 weeks, but he's previously said what Liz's doctor said, which is, well, you know, when she's got ADHD and a sleep disorder, it's hard to be treating depression because what's causing what. So we'll see. But at least I'm celebrating that she is now getting some help, which has been... she's been very reluctant, and the first person on the call whose name I didn't catch, I sort of resonated with me around, you know, Lauren's hates to ask for help. She thinks it signals that she's that she needs to be fixed, and she has this, she should be able to do it on her own because she thinks everybody else can.
Yeah. Fascinating, isn't it? It's awful. We're going to talk about that in just a little bit, but that's a really, really great point. And it's fabulous that she's reaching out and accepting help and asking for help when she needs it. Awesome. Kathy, what do you want to celebrate?
Are you talking to me?
I am.
And we
you want to check in and introduce yourself and just celebrate something that's been going well in the past couple of weeks.
So I'm Kathy. I have a son also going to college for the first time, and I drove him to the campus, which is just an hour away, to meet with the Office of Disabilities and sign any, just to have them have him be on their radar, and he signed up for some sort of peer tutoring maybe, or some sort of counseling with organization, which is great. And we drive him up there again tomorrow. So that's to be celebrated. And as I hear you guys talk, I'm thinking more about my 15-year-old daughter who hates asking for help and doesn't want anything pointed out to her, or is just really unwilling to learn from me. So, and who thinks she has some sort of social anxiety mixed in with ADD. So, and has tried a couple things but didn't like it and didn't stick with it very long. So I'm desperate to drug her and, you know, let her see how much better it can be. But that's not working out. I'm really interested in just hearing more about how to help people who don't want help, or how to help people who don't want help get help, or, you know, that's what I'm asking for help for.
I need help with asking for help, for helping my daughter ask for help. Yeah, perfect.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think I heard everybody's, thank you, Kathy, sorry. I think I heard what everyone is kind of wanting to take aim on, but I could be wrong. So if we can go back around just real quickly, and if it's changed, or if you want to get a little bit more specific about what you're thinking about taking aim on as we begin the conversation about asking for help and modeling how to ask for help, just chime in real quick.
So I'm taking aim on find it's psychologist she goes to is good, but we can only see every 2 weeks, and she wants more. So she's asking for more, which the psychiatrist wasn't going to come to because we're doing it privately. So I've got to look for something that's going to help her more than what we're getting and have a conversation with the psychologist. My aim is to do that over the next week.
Lots to do. Anybody else?
Well, I guess
I feel like
I want
go ahead,
my son to keep getting help, to keep now that he's I'm seeing some progress there, that and then what's my role in that? There are services in college, but it's up to him to take advantage of them. You know, they've offered for weekly check-ins to make sure that he's completing his homework and all the rest of it. I constantly struggle with this. Like, I don't want to nag. I don't want to be the one who's doing it. I want him to start to own it and handle it and ask for help on his own. And that's kind of my struggle. And I guess I need to figure out, how to get him to ask for help.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. We can tackle that too.
Great.
Kathy or Pam?
Oh, I was thinking, like, along with that, I guess just figuring out when to ask for help, because I'm actually, I think, too quick to ask for help. And so I'm not sure that I'm a good balanced model of, you know, figuring out what I know and what I actually need help with, if that makes sense. I may just be using it as per my own ADD as sort of bringing people in and creating, you know, energy and momentum around something, but she hates that. So, so if I could figure out. And similarly, like somebody was just saying for my son, figuring out when you know you need help rather than, like a good process for figuring that out.
So let me make sure I'm capturing it correctly. You want to take aim on making sure you or your kids are asking for help at the right time, sort of, like when they actually need help and not too soon and not too late.
Yeah, like figuring out when do you know you need help? What are the criteria instead of just when you're getting failed in a class? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, when do you, it's sort of the alarm bell versus the house burning down. When, like, is there a process? And what are the questions that, you know, sort of help you figure out when's the right time and when, you know, you sort of played out?
Gotcha. Okay, cool. Yeah.
I don't know if that's all circumstantial, but.
No, I think it's all good. I think it's all part of building that skill. And we'll definitely talk some more about that too. Did we catch everybody? Did anybody else want to chime in real quick before we move into the lesson part? All right, cool. Okay, so we're on page, I got 66 in the new workbook. If you don't have the new workbook, let me know and we'll make sure that we get it to you. And this is actually like the last chapter before we kind of start over again. There's one more chapter called Rinse and Repeat. And we ask you to go ahead and take a look at that one in the next couple weeks. And just kind of depending on where you are in the course of the Parent Success System, you may be coming to the end. And if you are, we hope you'll consider joining us for another year. Well, we have lots and lots of clients who stay with us for 3, even 4 years, just because, you know, with each year, our needs change, our kids change, and something different seems to come up. And when we're thinking about asking for help, one of the ways that a lot of parents ask for help is by joining the Parent Success System. So please feel free to sign up again if you're coming to the end of your year. And if you're in the middle of your year or, you know, maybe a quarter of the way through your year, this might be a good time to, you know, take a look back on what you've worked on and see if you are getting everything that you can get out of the program. And if you have additional questions or you're just looking for something more, definitely schedule a sanity session with one of us and we can kind of work through what's going on and what some ideas might be to maximize what's going on within the program for you. So the topic, like I said, is asking for help and more importantly, modeling how to ask for help so that our kids can learn how to ask for help. And I think, Pam, was it you who said that your daughter doesn't want to ask for help because that makes her feel weak?
Yeah, yeah. And yeah. When last year I wanted her to see a number of people because she was only diagnosed last year, she said to me, I feel like you're trying to fix me, Mum.
Mm-hmm.
She said, you know, like you think I'm broken and you're trying to fix me.
That's a great point. Mm. And how did you respond to that? I'm just curious.
I said to her, but I was really sorry that that's how she felt, and I understood that that she could feel that way. But what I was trying to do was recognize that she had some challenges that needed some specific support, and to make sure that she had that support available to her to help her.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, you know, we'd gone through an extremely rough time, and you know, the relationship between us wasn't great, and you know, things are a lot better now. And with, you know, the fact that I can now focus on this, and you know, the main focus is her getting through the school year, is just a sign of just how much shift has been made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's perfect. And it's interesting to me that, you know, in coaching now, asking for help is a skill that we have to teach people. Because it's become something that you're right, it's shameful somehow. And it's difficult for people to ask for help because they think it sends a message that they're incapable of handling things on their own or that they're weak. And even in situations where people admittedly and obviously need to ask for help, I'm thinking about the flooding in Baton Rouge, Louisiana recently, where, you know, a whole town of people has pretty much lost everything. And rather than ask for help for themselves, they're taking the things that they have left and giving them away because they don't want to have to ask for help. And it's sad on the one hand, and it's just kind of a symptom of our culture and that pride and doing it all on our own. And, you know, we need to learn how to ask for help because the flip side is, you know, if you think back to a time when you've been able to help someone else, and if it's been a death in the family or an illness or, you know, a baby and bringing a meal or, you know, helping watch some kids or, you know, helping clean a house or whatever it was, whatever thing you did to help someone else, and you think about how that made you feel to have the opportunity to help someone else, the upside of asking for help and being able to give help is so big. That we really rob ourselves and other people of the opportunity to benefit from that. And, you know, in the workbook, it talks about how asking for help gives others an opportunity to take responsibility and it allows us to take or to let go of control. Because I think that that's part of it too. You know, if I could ask my husband to do the dishes or load the dishwasher or whatever, do the laundry. But he's definitely not going to do it the way I do it. He'll probably do it better, to be honest with you. You know, in some cases, he may not do it as well. And same with our kids. You know, we may ask them for help. And, yeah, they may pick up their rooms or they may, you know, go to the store or whatever, and they may not get the things that we want them to get. And we have to be okay with letting go of whatever our preconceived notion or, quote-unquote, our way of doing it is when we ask for help. And the modeling part is the real critical piece. As you guys said, you have kids going to college, and if they have not learned to advocate for themselves, you know, past a certain age, we can't do it for them. And so in order for them to get the services and the support that they need, either in high school or in college, they're going to have to ask for it themselves. And so one of the biggest gifts we can give them is modeling how we ask for help and letting them see that it's okay to ask for help, and that in the end, the benefits way outweigh any risk of appearing like you need extra help. I think as parents of special needs kids, we are sometimes afraid to ask for help also because, you know, we see our friends who have neurotypical kids, or maybe they don't have as many things going on in their lives, and their challenges maybe aren't as dynamic as ours are. And so we forget that they don't have that extra layer of need that we have. And so we feel bad about asking, but we do. Our lives are a little bit more stressful, I would argue, than families who have neurotypical kids. And so it's okay to ask for help. But let me know what's coming up for you guys as we're talking about this. Like, what stands in the way of asking for help?
I feel like I'm repeating what other people have said, and I'm kind of struck by that. But I had the same experience with my kids, mostly my son, my oldest, who is like, quit trying to change me, quit trying to fix me. Everybody has ADHD. You know, he just refused to acknowledge that there was a problem. Kind of a head in the sand kind of thing. And there were all kinds of problems as a result of that. I mean, failing classes, discipline issues at school, you know, your kid won't sit still or whatever, or he speaks out of turn. And he just would never own it. And it's just really difficult. It's been really difficult to get that across to him. He won't take medication anymore. He stopped taking that right when he first started college, and he's not taking it now. Exercise helps a lot, so thankfully he's doing that now. But it's just scary. I mean, if they won't, I guess they just keep learning things the hard way until they decide that maybe I do need help.
Well, that's one way, certainly. You know, there are other ways to approach it too, right? I mean, you control what you can control.
And that would be ideal,
right. Well, let's come back to that, actually, because I want to dig into that a little bit more in terms of, you know, options and different approaches and things like that. But I want to make sure we get everybody else in real quick if anyone wants to share on kind of what's standing in the way of asking for help or what's preventing our kids from asking for help.
Well, I've just noticed something that way back we had a conversation, a group conversation, and the word, the saying, oh, you just need to da da da, you know, you just need to go and da 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 da. And I remember Elaine saying to try and rephrase that. And so I've been working really hard on that. And I don't know if it's because I've been working hard on that I've noticed that, or maybe that I'm just noticing that she's starting to ask for help. So we'll have a conversation and she'll say, Mum, I need to have a rest before we continue this conversation, or Mum, my brain's a bit overwhelmed right now, so can we come back to that? So she's actually starting to say what she needs, which is really fantastic. And I was able to compliment her the other day and say, hey, I really, you know,
great.
I really like it. That you're able to say what you need, because it has been hard, and sometimes she doesn't know what she needs, especially in some of the meetings she goes to. So I'm learning to zip my lip and pause and wait, and then she comes to it, because I think she comes to realise that it's not a negative, it's a positive, if you can learn to say that. So, yeah. It's just been interesting to observe that change, really.
No, that's fabulous self-awareness on her part, and kudos to you for recognizing that and complimenting her on it. I think that's phenomenal. It's huge, right? It's an amazing deal when our kids recognize that they are able to ask for help, and then they do. You know, we transferred my 12-year-old to a new school this year, and we were a little nervous about it. And like the third day in, you know, he hopped in the car at the end of the day and he said, "I am overwhelmed." and that was all we needed. You know, as soon as we knew he had reached the point of overwhelm, then we knew that we needed to put some other strategies in place. But he was able to communicate that to us, and it makes such a big difference rather than, you know, hanging on, right? Or waiting till too late. Most of the time we or our kids wait until it's too late to ask for help.
Yeah.
What else is coming up?
Exhaustion gets in the way for my daughter.
Say that again, emotion? Exhaustion. Oh, exhaustion, yeah.
Yeah, so, yes, she's had a tough week at school where she didn't go to school on Monday or Tuesday. She went Wednesday for a couple of classes, and then she went Wednesday, and then yesterday she had an appointment with the psychologist at 4 p.m. She went to school yesterday late, so she missed the first class, and she was there for two classes, and then she messaged me and said, "Oh, I can't do this anymore, can I come home?" So I picked her up, and then she just, you know, wouldn't get out of bed and didn't want to go to the psychologist because she was exhausted. And so that's happened on multiple times where she's had an appointment and she's got herself in a state and she just says, "I can't do it, I'm just exhausted." So that gets in the way for her. And the exhaustion from not enough sleep and just being overwhelmed and stressed, and the depression as well. In fact, her psychologist thinks the biggest cause of the exhaustion is actually the depression.
And once she treats the depression, hopefully it'll get better and she'll have a little bit more energy. And I'm sure it's somewhat mental anxiety.
Yeah.
You're thinking about the appointment and having to talk about things. And
well, that's right, because she says, you know, "I'm already exhausted and talking about this stuff is exhausting."
Yeah, that's a really good point. That self-care piece is critical as well. There's a whole lot to this thing, isn't there? I mean, how to take care of ourselves, teach our kids to take care of themselves and get enough sleep and learn how to ask for help. It's a big deal. Anything else critical? So what are some things that we can do differently? What is a way that we can model asking for help or teaching our kids to ask for help? If we apply that 3 to 5 year developmental delay, particularly with our kids that are going off to college, right? It's hard because they have to ask for help on their own, right? But they're not necessarily developmentally, you know, ready to ask for the help that they need. And they still need some accommodations that would be appropriate for maybe a sophomore in high school or even a freshman in high school, depending on the developmental delay. And yet intellectually and chronologically, they're in a space where they're with other kids their age, and it may not be cool or you know, fun certainly to look different and to need or to have different accommodations and supports. So what are some ideas? What are some things that come up for you guys when you think about ways to manage that piece? Liz, can you share with us the way that you reframed some of your questions or statements to your daughter? Oh, so that
you,
she was able
I
to...
knew you'd ask me that. Oh, my brain is so
sorry.
Full. I'm sitting here with a mental blank.
If you don't
want
to be on the spot.
Let me just think about this. Oh, no, I don't mind sharing. It's just actually having the words to kind of my brain is actually not working very well at the moment.
I'm with you.
Yeah, there's so much going on.
Sure.
Trying to think about the questions to get help for Kate. You know, I'm not bad at asking for help. I don't see it as a problem. I see you get lots of different ideas. Sometimes I can't come up with ideas on my own, and someone will give me an idea, and then it'll spark stuff. So, I know Kate has asked me, and I think this is probably quite off what you just asked me, but it's just something that's twigged.
No, go for it.
She will say, I have difficulty thinking about how to answer stuff. Like me, and if somebody gives her a starting point, then she can go on from there. So it's like being cued into
So sometimes it's that perfectionism piece, right? You know, we're afraid to ask for help, or we're afraid to let people see that we haven't done it perfectly, when good enough might just be good enough, right? Or, to your point, sometimes we just need that little nudge, someone to, I know for Elaine, whenever she has to write something, she'll usually ask Diane or myself to write a paragraph for her, and then she'll take it and she'll turn it into something fabulous. But writing the initial draft is always a challenge.
Yeah.
But as long as she has someone else's words there to springboard from, then she's ready to go. And so she knows that she needs that piece.
Yeah, that's what it's like. That's what it's like for us to do that. But I'd be quite interested to hear your answer to, or other people's answer to Jodie's issue with a child that won't. I suppose it relates to Pam as well, that won't
the medication
accept help. And because, somebody said to me, take your hands off organising, doing anything for your child, let them fail, let them just sit on your hands, do nothing. And I feel, because this is somebody who doesn't sort of believe in the whole concept of ADHD, and
love those people.
Yes, I have been in a rescuing pattern, and so that's what they were saying to me: take hands off, sit on them, don't do anything, and the cookies will crumble. She will fall out, and I'm thinking, well, actually, because you don't get the ADHD part of it, you understand. So I find that it's hard to know that balance between support scaffolding and letting them learn through their own mistakes. So I've found that a challenge. So,
I think that's a really good point. You know, that particularly when we have kids that have accepted help in the past and now they no longer want help. And, trying to think back to the things that we did when they were younger and the supports that we put in place, hanging your towel up after a shower, how many times how long did it take for that to kick in? And what supports did we need to put into place to make sure that happened? And, if we extrapolate that and try to apply it to where our kids are at now and the supports that they may still need, then it becomes somewhat a conversation with them and somewhat are recognizing that we still are in a position where we need to provide those supports. So like for Jody, he's refusing to take medication. Is that right? You may have to hang up.
Not yet. It looks like it might be good. It's been a couple years now, two years at least, that he stopped. And you could see a difference. Mm-hmm. It was low dose. So it wasn't as dramatic as my daughter would be. But that denial piece was the really hard part. But mm-hmm. everybody else has it, don't you know, Mom? I mean, at college, you know, everybody's coming in and asking for medication so they do better. It's obviously not everybody, you know what I mean? But
right.
that just flat-out denial that there's a problem.
Right. Right. And did he notice the difference when he was on medication? That things were better?
Something that you guys were able to quantify? For years, yes. Oh, yeah. And when we first did it, it was so dramatic. I mean, the positive mm-hmm. feedback we got from coaches and teachers and parents was unbelievable. I mean, you know, just black and white. Yes. Yeah. But, you know, there's just no reasoning with them at that point, at this later stage.
Right.
Now, since then, he's listening. I don't know mm-hmm. if he'll ever do medication again, but he's listening about, you know, the benefits of exercise, and he's taking omega-3s, and so he is more receptive.
Mm-hmm. And he's managing it in other ways.
Right, right. He is starting to,
Okay. And so his ability to manage it with exercise and supplements and diet, is it helping to a point that's acceptable to both you and him?
Well, I think that's to be seen. We'll see how this goes this semester. But I have to say I've seen improvement, yes. So 6 months ago, things were not good. But I'm definitely seeing improvement.
Okay. So is there a plan in place, or have you guys had a conversation about, you know, here's kind of when we'll know if we need to try something different? But in the meantime, if things continue the way that they've been going, everything's fine.
We really haven't had that conversation. He's 20 years old. So when he said, I'm not taking it anymore, he's an adult. There's nothing we can do about it.
Sure.
But we have talked, you know, one of the things that I've learned is really focusing on where the improvement is so that mm-hmm. it continues. So the celebrating successes to acknowledge, when you do this, it's positive and it has this effect. And that, mm-hmm. I think, we're doing a better job of.
Okay, got it. So he recognizes that he's being successful.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So what's the change that you would like to see?
Again, I think if there could be a little bit more ownership, like acknowledging it is a factor in his life and he's not like everybody else and he is going to have to ask for help.
Mm-hmm.
His class has just started this week, so I don't know where he is on going to the Office of Student Services, but mm-hmm. that's what I want to see.
Mm-hmm. So he may still go, or is it too late?
Without me telling him to. Oh, yeah, he still can. He's on their radar, but it still requires him to take steps. But, you know, mm-hmm. I can tell him to, and I can remind him, and I probably am going to very soon. I'm looking forward to the day when I don't have to do that.
Right.
You know, when he
but
when
knowing
he
that you may have to do that for a few more years, does that change the outcome or your approach at all?
No. I don't mind doing it.
I do.
Keep going. What bothers you about it?
You just said, so Jody's son's 20, and you said you'll still have to do it for a few more years.
Mm-hmm. I said, what if you still
that
had to do it for
me.
A few more years?
Oh, right. Okay, but that's still assuming that you still have to, or you may have to. When they're 25, 24, 25, it's like, what? Really?
You may have to do it when they're 30. There's a new research on the ADHD brain is showing that in the majority of cases, the brain does not catch up to their neurotypical peers until their late 20s and early 30s.
Wow.
Now, that doesn't mean that's the way it's going to be for your kids. but it could be. And does having that information and knowing that that's a possibility empower you in some way?
Wow. Freaks me out.
I believe it based on my experience with my husband.
Yeah.
Where is that study? Would you be able to put that up somewhere?
Yeah, like I'll put it in the form for you.
Okay, great.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I'll put it in the form for you. It's a. It's not meant to be scary information. It's just supposed to be information that, you know, that I think as a parent is good to know. You know, particularly when we start looking around at our friends and their kids, and even the, you know, once the 3 to 5 year developmental delay we think should have evened out, it's good to know. And even for neurotypical kids, there's evidence that the brain doesn't fully develop until mid-20s, which is why there's such attention now on concussions and, you know, drug and alcohol use under the age of 18. I mean, there always has been, but even more so, we're learning about the damage that it caused to the developing brain. But, you know, with respect to asking for help and providing help, you tell me, does it... I can see that it makes... You know, it kind of makes you feel sad, maybe, or tired. There's a longer haul to this than we maybe anticipated.
Yeah.
But part of me feels
yeah.
like, okay, if the, knowing that and knowing that that's what my kid might need to be successful, I'm okay with that. You know, knowing that I may need to remind, you know, him or her that to go, whatever, refill their prescription or work out every day or whatever they need to do to get through college with their self-esteem intact. I'm okay with that. What are you guys thinking?
I feel like that's stressful. Like it causes anxiety for me because what if I forget? And what if, you know, it's just like trying to manage my own self and then trying to manage to other people's, you know, wild schedules. And now one is going to not even be here. So... I'm assuming there's a lot less feedback and, you know, a lot less that I will be able to just know. So, I feel like that makes me really anxious. Like I'm going to drop the ball somehow and not know it soon enough.
Gotcha. So what systems and supports and structures can you put in place on this end to make sure you know and you feel that you've been providing the support and the reminders or whatever infrastructure that your son needs to be successful? It could be, you know, passing it off to your husband or... But
no, that's not effective. But I feel like, I mean, I don't even know that he wants me to be involved, that my son wants me to be involved that way.
And, well, he may not.
You know, if he wants to be a grown-up and whatever, but I feel like maybe there's help with technology of, you know, sort of setting reminders that automatically go out or having him set a reminder that automatically goes out or something. But I guess the other question that's coming up for me when you guys are talking is you know, my daughter wants help with what she wants help with and not with the things that I want her to get help with. So when I have said, like, you know, how are we going to deal with, you know, you participating, she in sort of in family life, she's a pretty much straight A student, but she will spend all her time in her room studying and she can't come down to dinner. She's super stressed about her homework. She's, you know, and she can't bother saying hello when she walks in the door. She's exhausted. Kind of thing. And it helps if I remember that she's ADD, but most of the time that's around when my medication wears off. And then I'm just really annoyed that somebody can't remember their key or say hello when I open the door. So but what she really thinks will solve all her problems is switching to her brother's room, which we're like, your room is like a hoarder, you know, horrible piles of clothes everywhere situation. Why would we give you a bigger room? And I don't know whether to err on the side of if this will bring her more you know, comfort or peace or, you know, because it's sort of just like a new scheme, you know, a new solution that's, of course, not going to work because you still have to just put your stuff away. It doesn't matter how much space you have. And yet, do I let her ride that out because this is what she's saying she needs rather than, you know, being willing to take medication or being willing to, you know, meet with a tutor to study more effectively or efficiently, or, you know, how do I balance, like, thinking her, you know, what she says she needs versus what I think she needs.
Well, what do you think?
Because she's asking for help in the sense of, you know, permission to move and make more of my house a wreck. But that doesn't address the reason why her room is a wreck or the reason that she spends most of her time there hiding.
Okay. And so what would a baby step look like for you and for her?
I don't know. We could negotiate if she takes drugs, she can move, I guess. Is that a baby step? I'm not sure. I mean, I don't know what a baby. I have no idea. Her argument is I'll have to clean my room if I move. So
I guess it's the real question, you know, how do you get her to do what you want her to do? Or is it how can you work together to achieve both of your goals?
Both.
Okay. Well, what has worked in the past?
She doesn't think it's important to, you know, show up for dinner or, you know, talk to anybody, but she's, but I do, so it doesn't matter. And so what's worked in the past? Mostly just screaming and crying and horrible, making her sit at dinner and then she ruins it, like just by being a lump or by complaining the whole time.
Right.
So yeah, I haven't found any solution yet. I avoid it. I tell her dinner time and then we eat dinner. And she doesn't show up and then she eats later and doesn't know what's happening. And that's how we do it.
Okay. And so knowing that that method hasn't worked. What are some things that you're willing to try or that she's willing to try in order to achieve that goal?
I mean, the only thing I can think is that I negotiate in order for her to go to her room. These are the three things she has to move rooms. These are the three things she has to do. But once she's there, she doesn't do them, then I'm not going to make her move, you know, every other week. So I'm
not
sure.
Well, just like any other, like, system or structure, you know, if you put the support system together and you agree on the methodology and she's not able to meet the goals or she's not able to meet the steps or the touchstones along the way, then you have to back up and reevaluate and figure out where we need to set the bar, you know, and was it a realistic expectation for her to do X, Y, and Z at this point in time? And what can we do differently in order to help her find some success and build up her self-confidence and keep that line of communication open? Does that make sense?
So words you're saying make sense, but I'm not really able to process it within this context, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is the difficulty I have with these conversations in that we're sitting here without the ideas and we need the ideas. And, you know, what I was talking about before, the trigger and there's an expectation that we have to try and drag an idea that we have no idea about. And I feel your pain. I get your pain. I understand. You don't know and you want some ideas, and so I'm sitting here frustrated for you.
I can tell you some of these things are similar. The whole dinner thing is a good example, and I can tell you some ideas that have helped a little with me, at least reduce the stress.
Go for it.
You know, without going into all the dramas of my family in the last year, you know, I've been really clear this year that the two priorities, or the three priorities I've had with Lauren are, number one, to actually have her living at home, two, to finish school, and three, to rebuild my relationship with her, and, you know, not in any particular order. So, you know, things that I might have previously had on my list that were requirements, which were, you know, responding when you're spoken to, having dinner with the family, I've now figured, you know, I can't have all these rules. It's just not working. I want her living at home. So I've taken the, you know, pressure off all the sort of lower order expectations, which, you know, not so long ago I didn't think were lower order. So most of the time she, you know, when she's at home, she doesn't come out of her room. But, you know, what I'm learning from talking to friends is that's also a neurotypical thing with adolescents. So there's lots of adolescents that don't emerge from their cave. So every evening at dinner time, I will set the table with a place for her, and I will ask her, and I'll assume she's eating with us, and I will ask her, where would you like to eat? And most of the time she'll say, in my room, is that okay? And she actually has gone from when I was requiring her to eat with the family, she would fight it and resist it. And if I insisted, it was a nightmare meal, and she'd, you know, she'd be sullen, and then it'd, you know, all be derailed and nasty argument. And now she asks me if it's okay, but probably at least once a week she will say, oh, I don't mind. And then she'll sit down and eat with us and be quite pleasant, which is has been wonderful, actually. So taking the pressure off that, and, you know, she doesn't have a great relationship with her father, and probably about a third of the time when he says something to her, she just completely ignores him, which I just sit and think, okay, breathe. But decide, you know, I'm just better off to let it go. And, you know, do I want to make a thing of this? And if I make a thing of it, how's it going to go? And is it going to make things easier or harder for my long-term goal of having her, for example, willingly stay at home, or at least not actively find a way to get out of the house? Anyway, that's what's been helpful for me, to actually get some, ironically, to have her eat with the family willingly has required me to not require her to eat with the family. Just that makes sense.
Let her have a choice. Yeah.
Let her have a choice.
Mm. That's helpful.
That was a perfect example. Yeah. Thank you for jumping in. Yes, I think that's the perfect example for lots of reasons. I think that, you know, we have house rules, you know, and you can decide as a family what your house rules are. You can have a family meeting regarding them, and, you know, you have some set in stone things. You know, we don't hurt each other physically, or we don't hurt each other with words, or, you know, whatever your family's house rules are, those are what they are, and they're non-negotiable, right? Until they're negotiable. And, you know, you pick the ones that are going to reflect your values, and you set the expectation realistically for who can meet what. And it may come down to, are you okay with giving up, you know, the idea of having everyone eat dinner at the same time? How important is that to, you know, the function of your home and the tone of your home? And it may change.
Yeah, that's helpful.
So that's happened to us because of sensory processing disorder, and the lights are quite bright and the room's bright where we have dinner, and it's changed because Pete's been sitting in a lazy boy just because of his wound that he's got from his operation. And so we don't all sit around the table now, so that's changed that dynamic. And so now she sits in her bedroom and eats, which I hate, but I let, because she goes on about the bright lights, which I turn down, and the environment. So I've given that up, but I miss her.
you know, you miss the conversation, but also she comes home from work and is really exhausted and needs some downtime. So then I go, okay, well, that's what she needs. So I've let it go. So.
Making the connection.
Oh, that's a good idea. Thank you.
Okay, so I'm cognizant of the time, guys. Yeah. I'm sorry. I know that we are getting close to the top of the hour. So let's just go back around quickly and maybe share what is an action step we're willing to take in terms of asking for help or working with our kids to help them ask for help or just modeling asking for help and what we need to be successful with that.
Well, I feel like you've given me permission to keep helping my kids, and that's a good thing. I don't mind sending him a reminder. I think that if I do it in the context of having him acknowledge how far he's come or where there have been successes, then he'll start to own it more.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's the best way that I can encourage him to get help, help on his own.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big proponent of getting help. So
yes.
I ask everyone for help. So I think I'm modeling, but.
Good.
Yeah.
And remember, we don't necessarily have to be the ones that are providing the help and the structure for our older kids. That's when the ADHD coaches come in. Tutors at school, you know, the student services department, they can a lot of times provide that structure and support so we don't have to, just as long as
right.
we make sure that they are taking advantage of that. So, excellent point.
Right.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Cool. Thanks, Jody. Who else wants to check out real quick?
I loved what you just said then, which I already said about given permission to continue helping. So even though I had that little freak out about brain development up to 30 years, it actually, like, as I've sat with it and thought, that knowing it is good, because then you know that, well, suddenly you can't take the supports away. This is going to be a long and gradual process, but that's okay. So that was like a big aha for me, sort of like, what? But yeah, just some of the stuff's come back into my brain about thinking about what supports they need and it changing as they get older, but still being there, being able to support them. I don't know about a realistic action step, but I suppose still encouraging and it's asking for help and acknowledging when she does that's a great thing she's doing and a great skill. So,
yeah
absolutely.
Good. Thank you.
The aha for me was when you said that asking for help is a skill. So I think I'm going to have a conversation with my daughter about that, just in the context of, you know, life as an adult as well, that, you know, we all need to ask for help at different stages of life, and it's hard for most people. So hopefully
that will
be a basis for a constructive conversation about it.
Yeah. Well, let us know how it goes. I always want to hear feedback and get some insights into how these follow-up conversations go. So if you have time, post it in the Lifeline forum.
I feel like I got some good tips from people. Thank you.
Yeah,
I appreciate the ideas. I do. I've got a lot to process, but I feel like it was helpful to hear people's ideas and people's situations. I feel like I have to choose what's most important for the moment. And I think it will change a lot once we drop off my son tomorrow. Then we'll all sort of feel like we have a new normal.
Yeah.
So thanks, everyone.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for being here. Thanks for letting me hang out with you today. And enjoy your next couple of weeks. And
you have any questions or concerns, don't hesitate to email or text any of us. Have a wonderful rest of your day.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The moderator has left the conference. The conference is now completed. Goodbye.